Them are selling the Bowflex machine. That's why I listen to WBAI New York.
And that's what you're tuned to, WBAI New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. If you hadn't heard, Phil Donahue passed last night, 2 days ago, on the 18th. He was 88 years old. The previous program, that was an encore presentation of Folk Radio. Right now it's 7 a.m. here in New York City at 99.5 FM, WBAI, WBAI.org on the web. My name is Michael G. Haskins, your radio host and guide. Weekday mornings coming up next is What's Going On with Keziah Glow.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. This is Tuesday. This is the edition of What's Going On, the Peace and Labor Report. Michael G. Haskins is our audio engineer, and Bob Henley is our executive producer. And it is August 20th, 2024. Sunrise was at 6:11 a.m. and sunset will be at 7:45 p.m. It's 63 degrees under a mix of sun and clouds, headed up to 73 degrees and a few clouds by this afternoon. Tomorrow and Thursday are looking like 67, and you can expect a mix of sunshine and cooler weather. So last night, WBAI and the Pacifica Network covered the Democratic National Convention, and I'd like to get your feedback this morning. I'd like to get your feedback as to what you heard last night. We will be bringing you some of the footage from AOC and Kamala. I'll bring you those speeches just in case you didn't get a chance to see them. But I would love to hear your thoughts and hear how you felt about the programming that we had last night. The number is 212-209-2877. That is 212-209-2877. So in our first segment, we are going to follow up with the SEIU Doctors Council. I have Dr. Lawrence Rezkala, ER doctor of Woodhull, Brooklyn on the line. But first, we are going to go to the Pacifica Network News.
Welcome to 2024 Talks. We're live from the Democratic National Convention at the United Center in Chicago and are tracking the 2024 election process.
It's been the honor of my lifetime to serve as your president. I love the job, but I love my country more. I love my country more, and we need to preserve our democracy.
President Joe Biden received an emotional reception speaking to the first night of the DNC. He described a long list of his policy wins, but also shared confidence in Vice President Kamala Harris as the Democratic nominee. Biden also says he holds no resentment towards those who pushed him to drop out of the race a month ago. Many delegates, like Silvia Lagos from Texas, say the Democratic Party is grateful to Biden for putting America above his own ambition.
I think he sacrificed what he really wanted for the betterment of the country, and because of that, we love him even more.
But in the streets outside, the intense emotions are different. Thousands of protesters are angrily calling for a ceasefire and an Israel arms blockade. White House says Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has agreed to ceasefire terms, but neither Netanyahu nor Hamas have confirmed the deal. New York progressive Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says Harris should get some credit.
She is working tirelessly to secure a ceasefire in Gaza and bringing hostages home.
More than 40,000 Palestinians and 1,000 Israelis have died since the war started. The DNC crowd chanted "Lock him up" about former President Donald Trump during former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's speech, a reference to the "Lock her up" chants of 2016 Trump rallies. Clinton says Trump has made his own kind of history.
The first person to run for president with 34 felony convictions.
New polling shows Harris is leading Trump by 4 points among registered voters and 6 points among likely voters. But Harris says she's still the underdog and will run like one. California Democratic Party Chairman Rusty Hicks says it's going to be close up and down the ballot.
In swing states, they will be decided by a handful of votes. In order to retake the House of Representatives, we've got to win seats in California. Those seats will be won by a handful of votes.
Arizona's Maricopa County continues to be the heart of many election conspiracy theories. Carl Gentles is a Democratic delegate from the county. He says it's good for democracy to see Harris getting Republican support.
When we see people on the Republican side reaching across the scene, we know and we want to support Vice President Harris. It's because they realize that she's in it for everybody. She's in it for Democrats, Republicans, and Independents.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. We'll be back tomorrow for day two of the DNC. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Thank you, Alex. Okay, so we are going to move to our first segment. And we have been talking to the Doctors Council. We have had a doctor on the line each week because we are in support of the SEIU Doctors Council, who are waiting for, I should say who is, that would be proper English, who is waiting for a settlement of their contract. And we are really pushing this because we believe that doctors in New York City are very important to, you know, our existence. And we stand behind this. And we have been bringing this story to you because we are allowing each doctor who comes on to tell their story, to say, this is how I began. This is why I have taken this oath to work in a municipal hospital. You know, I could leave and go someplace else, but I've been here for this amount of years. So this morning, I have Dr. Lawrence Rezcala, ER doctor of Woodhull, Brooklyn, on the line. Dr. Lawrence, good morning. Are you there with us?
Yes. Hi. Good morning, Ms. Kizaya, and good morning to all the listeners. And thank you so much for having me today.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much for being on. Thank you so much for being up early this morning. I know I had an opportunity to speak to you a little late last night. So thank you so much. And I'm sure it's part of the nature of your work to do this. But, you know, I just want to jump right in. Number one, like I said, we've been having this conversation because it's important to us. It's an important conversation. And I always stress, you know, someone may say, well, why do you keep having this conversation? But each time you go to the ER, whenever someone goes into the ER, you are in a vulnerable space. And I can speak for myself and the experiences of the people that I have experienced. I can't speak for every listener, but when you are in the ER, you are normally in a vulnerable space. When you make those calls to 911, you are normally in a vulnerable space. And that's when you really need someone to help you, care for you, and take care of you. And when there are not enough people on staff, it can mean the difference of your recovery. So Dr. Rezcala, I want you to first tell us a little bit about yourself and what department you work in. I know we said ER, but draw us a picture of what you do.
Yes, for sure. I'm happy to do that. And I thank WBAI for supporting our cause. And definitely we are all working for the same thing. We want all the New Yorkers to be advanced in health and in all aspects of society. So I was born in Egypt, and I was a medical doctor there. And the reason I chose to be a doctor was actually my father. I had my brother who's younger than me who died from polio. And it's a virus infection that can affect people. And unfortunately, we did not have vaccination at that time, and he died from that. And that left a big scar in the family. So I guess this is one of the things that pushed me to choose this career to help people and find a way that to save lives. I was OBGYN, obstetric gynecologist in Egypt. I was happy to bringing people to life. It's a very happy moment to the physician and the parents, and everybody will be happy. And you see some changes happen in people's life, and that's actually deep down in my life. I wanted to bring happiness to people and save lives. When I immigrated to the United States back in 1990, I did not have a plan to practice here, so I have to start from the scratch, doing everything again. I start working, and after I finish all my certificates and credentialing, I start working in Woodhull, 1999. And I'm still there since that time, working in emergency room as a ER physician, seeing generations of people around me. In addition to Woodhull, also I worked a few years in correction facility on Rikers Island, and that opened my eye to how much disparity and unequal treatment in the society when I have seen young people there in jail for very simple things. It broke my heart, really. When I lived there, and I worked also in private hospitals, emergency room private hospitals, but it didn't last that long. I felt more to focus on the work of missionary work. You can say it as Dr. Michelle Allen, who our chief medical officer of Hospital and Health Corporation, she usually say that we are working here on a mission, which is true. We're working on a mission. We are trying to deal with the most difficult cases, population that's been deprived from every aspect. Our population in Bushwick around Woodhull, for example, they are marginalized populations, 50% Hispanic, more than 20% African-American, non-English speakers, 45% of the household there. So that's basically, you know, the motivation that keeps me working there to help those who are in most need of help in these areas.
You know, it's very interesting because when you get the backstory of many doctors who are working in the health and hospitals, you hear the stories of why they're doing it. It usually comes from a situation that may have happened years ago or something that relates to their family, because in order to do the work that you're doing, you just can't, you know, there has to be something greater than yourself that gets you to get up every day and to work in these marginalized areas and situations, as you stated, because it's not pretty every day. You know, being in certain hospitals, seeing the disparities, you said you had an opportunity to work in the correction system. And that in itself, the healthcare that inmates receive is terrible, just to say the least. I mean, I couldn't think of a better way to say it, sorry. But the healthcare that they receive is not good. And so for you to go into that space and to see yourself as a missionary and say, I am here to serve, speaks to the work that you're doing. You know, my question to you is, we hear your driving force, but what are some of the things that you saw when you were working inside of the correctional facilities that that changed your life and said to, made you say to yourself, this is the path that I want to be on?
Sure. You know, there's so many things that really my kids are telling me, Dad, you need to write a book about all these things. It will affect many lives. And it did really affected me so much to know. It opened my eyes to how much disparity in the society. I have seen young kids in jail, 17 years old, 18, 20, 25, coming just because they didn't have any, you know, financial support. And one guy told them, you know, you can carry this back from here to there, and I will give you $100. And, you know, because of the need that they have, they did it and ended up in jail for 2-3 months. And once your name in the system, which something I didn't know that, once your name in the system, every time something happened in your area, you would be the first suspect to be there, whether you did it or not. And that's really, sometimes from these stories, I literally cried. You know, it's really hard to see these disparities. I wouldn't forget one time an old man, and he told me, Doc, I saw him several times, comes in back and forth. I said, what happened? You know, he said, Doc, I have no family. I have nobody to take care of me. I have no job. No one will hire me. So what I do is I go to, for example, the subway and jump over the turnstile, and the police will arrest me, and this is how I spend my life. I come here and, well, I eat 3 meals in a day and somebody takes care of me. Oh, that's really sad. And I mean, we are living in the richest country in the world, and this is the biggest city in the world, and things should not be this way. And it's not lack of money. It's, I don't know, really, I mean, I don't want to go in politics, but we can do better than that. And our case as a doctor's counsel, and we are fighting now for getting just a fair share of the for the work we do, just to, you know, support our families. And there are new doctors who are actually having lots of loans. They need to pay that. And I understand, you know, politics involved in these things, but the city should actually look with a fair eye to all people under, especially the leadership and management of health and hospitals, and the mayor need to treat all their employees, especially the health care providers, who we actually the only union, the only section in the city, a worker in the city who brings revenue to the city. Department of Education, they don't bring revenue. Department of Sanitation, they workers, they are good people, but they don't bring fund to the city. We are the only corporation, the health and hospital, that, as per Dr. Mitch Katz, we are still funded. We fund ourselves and the people who work there. About 50,000 people work there. So doctors, when you go to the hospital in Iskisaya, you look for two people, a nurse and a doctor. Everybody else is on salary. And you need to see those people, and they have to be professional enough, educated enough, credentialed enough to take care of you. And this is what the city needs to focus on and just look with a fair eye to doctor's counsel and treat them well for the sake of all New Yorkers' health and patients.
You know, in your voice, you can hear the genuineness in your voice. And that in itself, when you tell these stories, I literally can feel it. And another time that the city really saw it was impacted, and I'm sure your team was working very hard, but I want to hear your experience during COVID. What was that like for you and your team? What were the and we don't have to go into it, you know, the experiences, because I know you had a lot, but what was the impact of COVID, and what did you guys deal with, you know, during that time? Because doctors, first of all, in marginalized populations, didn't have the resources. You know, at first, there wasn't enough masks, there weren't enough ventilators, there wasn't enough for everyone. So in these areas, we were seeing the doctors were overworked. We were seeing doctors breaking down and nurses breaking down. And they were reporting and crying and saying, this is too much. We are people. We can't handle this. What was that experience like?
As you said, you know, Ms. Kasaya, you actually summarized it very well. We lacked PPE, which is, you know, masks and ventilators and everything. I myself, I can tell you, the physician assistant who was working with me during that time, unfortunately, she got sick and we couldn't save her and she lost her life. We were fighting an enemy in the dark. We did not know anything about COVID as a virus. How bad was it? How we treated? Our medical literature was very limited. The resources we have were little. We were actually, every healthcare worker was on a suicidal mission. Every time we go there, I don't know if I'm going to catch, which I did. I did catch COVID or not. I don't know if I'm going to survive or not. And even if I survived, how about my family? You know, we had to, at one point they put us, they told us to like take showers in the hospital before we go there, change our clothes, just to make sure, you know, when you go home, you also do the same thing, live in a separate area away from your family. That, you know, was really, you know, left some of us with PTSD. The patient we have seen in the hospital, in the emergency room specifically, was not a pleasant thing. You can see a patient who is fighting COVID on a ventilator, the other one in a body bag, then another body bag, then another patient on a ventilator, and someone in a corridor asking for help, and we have no way to help those people. We practice war medicine, literally, during that time. And that was, that left us, you know, I don't know if you heard about the physician who actually committed suicide. She couldn't take it. It was really hard. However, I hope the city will not forget that. I mean, we usually say we never forget, but apparently right now we are dealing with a situation that the doctors being, doctor's counsel are being treated as anybody else. Like we are, you know, you don't deserve what you are asking for. We ask them, we need more staff, we need more physicians, and the physicians who comes, we need some resources to keep them in. You know, it's not right to have a physician who comes in to work because just graduated, they have no experience, and once they have experience, they leave. So the turnover is very high in ER specifically. And last year, for residency, for example, there were 550 positions that were not being filled. That never happened before. Mm-hmm. Why people feel like they're burned out in emergency department, and there are other specialties that more comfortable, and if they can do better under other specialties. So the city, I hope and I pray that God will not put us again in a situation like what happened during COVID. I'm seeing all these makeshift morgues around the hospitals with all these bodies. But if this happened again, now the city is giving us a message that they don't care. We are like anybody else in the street. They don't even look at us the same like other unions, like NYPD or sanitation department or Department of Education. That's to me. I can't really fathom why they are doing this, really. And it's not lack of money. I can tell you that it's not lack of money. If there is a shortage in ER, for example, if there is no staff, they will hire people who are locum. They call locum, which they pay them 2 to 3 times whatever they pay for a regular doctor. So they rather to pay more money, getting different doctors, and basically pushing patient away, because you want as a patient to have your own doctor all the time, comes and see your doctor as your doctor. Not every time you're going to see somebody else, different person. So the city need to, I don't know. And we asked it to actually have a meeting with the mayor to speak to him about these things. And I'm sure the Michigan, who is the head of H&H, provided the total picture to him. So I'm not sure why. You know, I met Mayor Adam a couple of times when he was Brooklyn president, and we spoke with him at that time with the gun phase initiation that he was taking it, and we offered our help to him. He was very supportive. He actually came at one time to Woodhull Rally to help us get a good contract with NYU. So I'm not sure what happened to him now, why he is isolated or disconnected from healthcare workers. We don't want to go back to see another virus pandemic happens. Then you're not going to see the same support you had from the doctors that you had before, definitely.
Well, just to your point, it's not just, you know, by the doctors not settling the contract. It's not just saying that he doesn't care about the doctors. He's also saying he doesn't care about the people who the doctors serve, because you are overworked, and I'm sure many of the doctors experienced PTSD from that time, because it was like a war, you know, but we didn't know who the enemy was. But we as the constituents, we as the end users, we were suffering as well, because we didn't have enough service and we weren't prepared for that. And I remember that time because I'm a board member on Bronx Care Health Integrated Services System, which is also called BLIS. And the meeting right before COVID, we had just talked about the online healthcare, telehealth, and we were testing it out. And at that point, COVID was in Wuhan. And I had a colleague whose family was from Wuhan. And she said, you know, this Chinese New Year, everything is shut down. And I had saw things online and I was like, it's really shut down. And she was like, yeah, you know, it's shut down. And so simultaneously, I was in a meeting and we were kind of talking about telehealth. But we were not prepared for what was to come that March. It was like it exploded. And so I agree with you. If we were to experience anything like that in a different capacity, right? Because it's never the same thing twice. You know, how would we fare? What have you learned from all of this? What was your takeaway? What did you walk away with from these experiences, because again, we can hear it in your voice. You know, what did you leave with?
So yeah, because I can tell you right now, our experience at this moment, we had 2 weeks ago, we had measles outbreak in two shelters around Whittle Hospital. They came to the hospital, had been identified and diagnosed as measles. And because we learned before from COVID the quarantine, the effectiveness of quarantine and keeping people with health check clinically, seeing patients there and putting more staff to watch and keep people isolated, we were able to contain that measles outbreak. You know, the community around us can very easily be affected by this. If you know Bushwick area, just a few blocks away from Bushwick area, there are also a large Jewish community, and it happened before that this measles outbreak happened among them. So having a couple of cases and in one of the shelters specifically, and that was a nightmare. And we, with the Department of Health and our leadership in Woodhull, we were able to isolate those patients and go back to the shelter and do whatever necessarily steps to stop the measles outbreak. And thank God we were able and we were successful. At this moment, we are facing the mpox, the monkeypox, which is declared by WHO as an international or world emergency possible pandemic. Thank God we don't have, any cases so far in Woodhull monkeypox. But it's possible that we're going to have some outbreak in the community. In addition to all this, we have also the overdosing of patients, the populations with fentanyl, with K2. There was one time, and it happened in Woodhull, actually, we had 33 patients of K2 came in one day, and we were able to save all of them. Some of them went to the ICU, intensive care unit, from the emergency department. But we were able to save them. And actually, the Wall Street Journal, they came and wrote an article about this. So we are facing, and also, as a reminder, also, Woodhull is the largest mental health institution in that area that we are there in Bushwick. And Woodhull also is designated a stroke center that anybody who experiences stroke symptoms, they can be assigned immediately to Woodhull. We've been notified, and we have a protocol, a process in place that we deal with them immediately. And we are doing a great job. They're saving people, actually. And I hope, the city will give the resources and the fund enough to help us retain the doctors who get the experience there, and we recruit those who need to be there as professionals and more credentials, so we can keep people safe and we save lives.
Wow, Dr. Rezkala, we thank you so much for the work that you're doing. Just the last few things that you mentioned, so many New Yorkers were killed, or they lost their life, I should say, from K2, from fentanyl. The work that you're doing is for a population that is often forgotten, and it's for a population that people say we don't care, they don't matter, and you are reminding us that everyone matters, and it's not profits over people. So we really do thank you for your work, and we thank you so much for sharing these stories. If you can think of anything you need our listeners to do, what do you need them to do?
I wanted to know that it's very safe and we are open 24 hours and Woodhull Emergency Room, and we will take care of them whether we are short staff or not. They should feel comfortable. And the influx we have at this moment with many patients, including, I would say, Mitch Cass, who is the head of the organization, who actually directed his relatives to choose SNH hospitals to take care of them better than private hospitals. I want them to feel safe. They come to us and we take care of them no matter what. And I want them to speak to their politicians who are around them, send them letters, speak to them, let the city know that their physicians need to be treated well so they can take care of them. That's it. And I hope the best for you, Ms. Kazaya, and WBAI. Really, you are supporting us and helping us a lot and giving us the opportunity to present our case and speak about these crises. And I hope the city will rethink the way they are treating their physicians.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Dr. Lawrence Rizkala, ER doctor for the ER department at Woodhull, Brooklyn, from the SEIU Doctors Council. We thank you so much for joining us and sharing your stories this morning with us. Okay, so we are going to take a break and we will come back. Of course, I definitely want to hear from you. We pushed it a little bit because it was a wonderful and impactful conversation. The telephone number when we come back is 212-209-2877. I am Keziah Glow and we are taking a break and we'll be right back.
Hold on to me. Don't let me go. Who cares what they see? Who cares what they know? From man's white flower, it's an every living thing. Mind, use your power, spirit, use your wings.
Freedom, freedom, freedom,
freedom, freedom, freedom.
Okay. We are back, and that was Pharrell Williams with Freedom. Thanks to sustaining sponsorship from both national labor unions and some local unions representing close to 2 million rank and file members, WBAI and the Pacifica Radio Network was able to bring you nightly coverage of the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. And this week, we will continue to bring you the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. And it has started last night and it was amazing. On the ground and in the convention hall, interviews and sounds will be provided by a team of reporters from our local network affiliates in Chicago. The newscast is being co-anchored by Shali Pittman, news director at WORT, Madison, Wisconsin, and Jenna Flanagan, formerly with WNYC and WNET's Metro Focus. Bob Hennelly will also be on the scene, bringing us the kind of reporting we have come to rely on. WBAI and the Pacifica Radio Network's national political coverage is supported by sustaining sponsorships from the American Federation of Government Employees, representing 750,000 federal workers in all 50 states, 1199 SEIU, the largest union of healthcare workers in the nation, representing 450,000 members, 32 BJSEIU, America's largest building service union, representing more than 175,000 workers in 11 states and Washington, D.C., CWANJ, representing 70,000 public and private sector workers. The United Steelworkers Local 4200 represents nurses at Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital in New Brunswick, New Jersey. New Jersey's HPAE, representing 14,000 nurses and allied healthcare professionals. New York Metro Area Postal Union, APWU, AFL-CIO. Teamsters Local 210, New York City's second largest Teamsters Union, in a heavy presence in the airline sector across the nation's airports east of the Mississippi. AFSCME DC 37 Local 3621 FDNY EMS Officers, NYC Organization of Public Service Retirees, and of course, Mike Quill's Transport Union of America. Let's go with the Samuelson.
The Transport Workers Union fights the bosses for our 155,000 members across the economic spectrum. Airlines, mass transit, rail, school buses, bike share, tourism, university and utilities, even Central Park horse carriage drivers. I'm John Samuelson, International President of the Transport Workers Union. If you want a strong voice at the workplace, if you want to improve your life, join us. We are the TWU, America's Fight Back Union.
Okay, so last night, I don't know if you had the opportunity to tune in to WBAI. I mean, we were having a party, I should say, on air. It was amazing. Our team, as we said, were in all different parts of the convention. I mean, we had some people on the floor. We had some people outside. We had some people moving around, and we had several different interviews. We had a chance to speak to the head of the teachers union. It was really an interesting experience. And what I would like to do is hear what you thought of it. 212-209-2877. What is really important is that we had our fund drive last week, and we said to you, we kept saying, the program is the premium. And by Friday, I was speaking backwards. I had it backwards on Friday, but the program is the premium. And so last night shows that we are working to bring you premier programming. We're doing things a little differently, and we're trying to be creative and come up with interesting programming. So I'd like to hear from you. I'd like to hear what you thought about our programming, or you just want to share and let your voice be heard, this is the place to do it. So if we can go to the phone lines, if there is a caller waiting on the line, I would love to hear from you. Good morning. Where are you calling from? And let us know your name.
Good morning. My name is Anthony.
Good morning, Anthony. Share with us what's going on this morning.
Yes. Well, I was watching the new show this morning, recapping last night. I've been voting since 1972, when I was 18 years old. And I always had a history of the Democratic Party. It was within my grandmother telling me stories growing up on how it helped her come into America. So it was always in that vision. And last night's event showed that this party knows how to understand what people truly need. And what I saw last night was actually invigorating. Raphael Warnock gave a speech that was phenomenal because you felt the words that were real. And Joe Biden showed how he passed the baton to the woman he picked to be his vice president. And Barack Obama in 2004, I just want to give you my share of how everything plays. When he gave the keynote speech in 2004 for John Kerry, I told my wife, that's the next president of the United States. When I heard him speak, he has it. He has the ability to use a screen and tell the truth. And he became president, but he also knew he was young in the business, and he needed somebody who could help him steer the ship. And that person was Joe Biden. And Joe Biden was the loyal VP for 8 years, and then he had the opportunity in 2020 to get this country back. And God bless him, his family, his age, but he saw the moment. He said, you know what? I have somebody here next to me that can do it just as well, and if not better, and open the door for more people. And I am not afraid to support that lady, because she is what America is all about. She is the future for my granddaughter. She is the future for everybody's grandchildren. And I'm a grandfather now, so that's why I use that term. But what I saw last night will not be beaten by the other side, because now we know how to tell the truth right back at them. Before, we were too soft, the Democrats, and let the Republicans dictate policy. This is a man who's running for president for one reason. The media doesn't say it. To stay out of jail. That's all it is. He has enough money to live on his golf course, but he's going to go to jail. Because this country, if I break the law, if you break the law, we're held accountable. No one is above the law unless you want to be a dictator. And the people that are following him are feeding off of the only thing he has is hate. He feeds off hate. Last night we saw love. We saw people come to AOC, and the young lady from Texas were phenomenal. They were phenomenal how they reached across everybody. When you watch something and you can feel it, and you know the people like you are watching it, then you understand that everybody's feeling the same thing you are, that we are ready to go, that we want this election to come so we can put a lady in power that will represent what this country should have always been about, that everybody has that chance. That's how I saw it last night.
Question for you. I'm not sure if you had an opportunity to tune in to WBAI and catch what we were doing, because we do a different spin. We do a lot of interviews and we get conversations from we get them from politicians, local activists, and we let you hear what's going on the ground as well as on the convention floor. Did you, if you didn't get a chance to hear that, tell us, how do you feel about what's been going on with WBAI? You know, have you seen anything or heard anything that you like?
Well, I got to be honest with you. So last night, the radio, my wife has WBAI playing 24/7 in our apartment. So, but while it was on last night, my eyeballs were raised with a screen. So I was watching with the TV and hearing in the background. Can I
tell you things it was?
So, but what I understand with BAI, I told you I was 18 years old in 1978, too. That means I missed Vietnam by one war. So my eyeballs grew up watching the Vietnam War on TV. And that's always been my premise on people dying for no reason. And I always felt that when that man became president, there was sometimes BAI was acknowledging him that he was a decent individual. And they were knocking the Democratic Party for doing this and doing that, not knowing that you can't have this man in power. There is nothing about him that makes him that he should be president. There is no justification from somebody from BIA saying, well, she did this and he did that. No.
Mm-hmm.
He's
right.
The reincarnation, in my opinion, of evil. And I worked for the guy.
Okay. I'm gonna have to stop you right there because you know, I'm not sure if there is another caller, but you know, I just want you to know that we definitely, definitely appreciate you. We appreciate you and your wife for listening. And, you know, tell her we said thank you for keeping the radio on 24/7. We definitely appreciate
24/7,
that.
24/7, it's on right now, dear.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Okay. You too. Have a great day. Have a wonderful day. Okay. So we were talking about, you know, we're always mentioning the support of the unions. And, you know, I just want to also mention we did have support during the fund drive from the SEIU Doctors Council. They were very supportive to us. And last night we did hear from Sean Fain, the United Auto Workers president. And, you know, he used that opportunity to stake his claim against auto workers and, you know, going back on commitments. And that was really, it was really powerful to see him there. AOC was there and Kamala was there. And so, you know, when Kamala spoke, we felt it. We felt a lot of energy and it was really, really intense. Now, what has been said is that we need to continue to write down our claims. You know, what is it that we would like to see? What is it that we want? You know, it's very important that we do that with our elected officials and we remember that their role is to work for us. And so we never want to just get into a position where we say, okay, we just give our ticket away and it's okay. We always want to be able to be in a space where we are saying, you know, these things are important to us. We want to remember these things. We want to engage. We want to stay present and let our voices be heard. And, you know, I had a few clips to play, but time runs so fast. So, you know, I just really want to remind you of the importance of WBAI and having spaces like this one where you can come on and you can allow your voice to be heard and you can hear several different sides of the same story, right? Because when there is a narrative, there's often different sides of the narrative. And one thing we do on WBAI is we allow you to think, we allow you to make intelligent decisions, you know, to remember that everything is not always as it seems, especially in the media. And so this is a place where a trusted space where you can trust the context, the information, the content, I should say, that is being brought to you on your airways. So I'm going to begin to wrap it up. I am Keziah Glow, and you have been listening to What's Going On in the Morning. I urge you to continue to listen, to continue to call in, to continue to allow your voice to be heard, because this is a space where you can do that. And, you know, it's important that we keep these spaces available so we can hear from the doctor that we heard from this morning, so we can allow you and our callers and keep a space. So tomorrow, Linda Sarsour is going to be here in this space. She is actually also in Chicago. And we will be hearing from our team that is in Chicago. And tonight, I hope you tune back in to our DNC coverage, because I know it's going to be wild. I know it's going to be wild. We never know what we're going to get, but it's always really great content. So tune in tonight to WBAI from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. for our DNC coverage. It is going to be amazing. And I am Keziah Glow. And you have been listening to What's Going On, the Tuesday edition. Democracy Now! Is up next, and I am signing off. Thank you so much for listening.
just one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I can't move. Freedom, cut me loose. Yeah. Freedom, freedom, where are you? Cause I need freedom too. I break chains all by myself.
WBAI New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Beyonce's Freedom over this commercial-free and listener-sponsored radio station. And the best way to contribute to support us is to go to our website, become a BAI Buddy. It's really simple. Just type in buddy.wbai.org. Buddy, B-U-D-D-Y, W-B, buddy dot WBAI.org and make your contribution there. Why? Because we are a commercial-free and listener-sponsored radio station and have been so in the center of the FM dial in New York City since 1960. Imagine that. Commercially free. Right in the same area, if you think about it, that all kinds of stations are being bought up, and Bob Henley, the interim general manager, said, I mean, there's no guarantee that this station is going to be here. It has remained in the center of the FM dial because of you. Because of you. Now, you know, these sustaining contributions from the unions are so critically important. They've given us breathing room when we were out of oxygen, truly. And I've been here since, the 90s, early 90s. We were out of oxygen. But now there is a resurgence going on. But it cannot be, let me put it like this. It must be in collaboration with the listeners, those of you that tune in like the caller did and has the radio. I mean, I hadn't heard that since Harry Belafonte said that some years ago, that he has radios tuned to WBAI in every room in his home. I hadn't heard that since then. You are the linchpin to WBAI's success. So whatever you can do, if it's $10 a month, if it's a $25 first-time subscriber, if you want to be a major donor for $500 or more, go to our website, WBAI.org, or just type in buddy.wbai.org. and make your contribution. Democracy Now! Is coming up at 8 o'clock. And right after that, Law of the Land with Gloria J. Brown Marshall. And right after that, Minefield with Dr. James McIntosh. Listener-sponsored WBAI. We thank you so very, very much. And the calls that we didn't get to in this hour, please keep with us. Stay with us as we go forward on WBAI. I'm excited. Believe me, I've been around.